The midterm is Wednesday. We may not be able to get it graded by Friday. We'll try, but don't depend on having your scores available by Friday. However, they certainly will be available over the weekend. Okay, so what we're going to do is finish going through some of the stuff in Chapter 6, including a couple of more examples. And then we'll go through example each from 4 and 5. So once again, bear with me for a second. Okay, we're going to start at the left end of the board. So what I'm doing is, what I did is focus my camera down there. Okay, so the work energy theorem along a curve says the work done is the integral along some curve of the force times the displacement. The picture that goes with this is you have some curve, and there are a bunch of little displacements, dl, you're making, like that. And you just have to add up all the forces times the dls, remembering to use the dot product. Okay, so what about this example of the kid on the swing? Let's work through that. We're idealizing the kid as a mass. He's moving along a circle thanks to the rope. There's some angle theta here, as shown. You might think this is going to be about pumping up the swing or something, but it's actually an even easier problem than that. What we're going to do is just very slowly push him up. So we initially, to start with, he's hanging straight down, and then we apply a force just enough to start him moving very, very, very slowly. And so he goes up, 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 up. And then after we get him up to a certain theta, we can all of a sudden let go, and then he'll swing back and forth. But we're not going to talk about the swinging back and forth. We're only going to talk about what happens as we push him up. The first question is, what is the work done on the boy by all forces? In other words, there'll be some resultant force on him, which is the sum of all the forces acting. And the question is, what is the result, the work done by all forces? Well, that's actually a very, very simple question. And the reason is, we said that he's moving very, very slowly, and he's really moving through one little equilibrium state after another. At any one time, he's really in equilibrium. And in equilibrium, the acceleration is zero, or at least it's as small as you want if you push him very, very slowly. And therefore, from F equals ma, it follows that the resultant force on the boy at any one time is zero. So the resultant is zero. The work done on the boy, let me go back up to this formula here, is therefore some integral along a curve, or along a circle or something, of r dot dl. But that's just zero, because r is equal to zero. So I don't think that's a trick question. I think it's just a very, very easy question. If the forces on a body add up to zero all the time, then no work is being done. Okay, and the second question, that was question number one. Question number two, let's see, I want to stay on this board, so let me erase up here and work up here. Question number two is, how much work is done by you you are supplying the force F, which is slowly and steadily pushing the boy up. So you're applying some force which acts over a certain distance. What is the total work done by that force? Now we're going to have to work out the free body diagram. At any particular angle theta of the rope, we have the weight downward, always straight down, and we have the force that you're supplying, and we have the tension in the rope. And remember the picture on the screen, what we want to do is break the tension up into its horizontal component, which is T sine theta, and its vertical component, which is T cosine theta. And then, because the sum of all these forces is zero, as we talked about down here, we can just set each component, the x component and y component of all these forces, equal to zero. And what we find is that F minus T sine theta equals zero. That comes from the x component of this equation. There's F, there's T sine theta. They have to add up to zero because the resultant force is zero. In the y direction, we have a similar equation. Upwards, we have T cosine theta, and downwards, we have W. Those happen to equal to zero. So what do we want to know? We want to know the force that you're supplying. How do we do that? Well, we could get it from this equation here, but we don't know the tension yet. But we can get the tension from this equation here. So once again, we wrote down some equations. We focus on what we want to calculate, namely the force. We calculate on what we have. We focus on what we already have, the weight and the angle. And we write down enough equations that we can solve them to get what we need. So from this equation, we find the tension is equal to the weight divided by cosine theta. That's solving the y equation. We can then plug the tension back in the top equation, the x component, and find the force that you're supplying in the x direction is then T tan tangent of theta. So we've done a number of different calculations and examples like this. I hope this looks kind of familiar the way it came out. Okay. So what is the work done as we push along? Well, again, here's the picture. There's the force. There's the distance, their displacement, in a little step dl from one little step to the next. You can see that these two vectors won't be in the same direction. Initially, when the kid's hanging straight down, F is horizontal, the displacement is horizontal along that circle. And so initially, they are in the same direction. But as we go up the circle, the force is always kept horizontal, but dl is then at some angle. And so what is that angle? Well, it just must be theta. You can use similar triangles or something here, but you kind of see that when theta is zero, the two things are parallel. When theta starts kicking up, dl is at the same angle, theta, to the horizontal. And so the net effect is that F dot dl is just F cosine theta dl, where this is now the vector dot product of the two things. And as usual, you can turn the vector dot product into an ordinary product of the two magnitudes just with a cosine theta in the middle. What is the little step dl? Well, that's just a fact about circles. If you go through a little step d theta, as seen from the origin along a circle, how much circumference do you go through? Well, you go through dl equals r d theta, where r is the radius of the circle. So the net effect is that f dot dl, let me write down what we want here. We want integral of f dot dl, that's the work done, is then integral f cosine theta dl, dl is r theta, so this works out to f cosine theta r d theta. Okay. Let's see, we're not going to ask you to do calculus and integrals on the test. I guess I should reveal that to you. But it's more the setup of this equation that's important as to, than all the final details. Let me just tell you, you can go ahead and do this integral and find that it's fr sine theta, where theta is how far you go in pushing the kid up. And then if you put in the numbers, we already calculated what f is. This then works out to tr. Oh, sorry, I just realized I made a mistake back up here calculating the force. I set it right, but then I didn't complete the story. We substituted t equals w cosine theta, so the final answer was just little w tangent theta. So the force applied is the kid's weight times tangent theta. The kid's weight is, of course, just his mass times g. So the final formula, as I should have written down, sorry about that, is the force is equal to mg times tan theta. So if we plug in down here, the final answer is that the work done by you is mg tan theta sine theta. Okay, that was a rather complicated example. We're now turning to power. Remember the formula is average power is just work done over the time interval, or if you take the limit, you find that the instantaneous power is dw dt. And we'll do an example in a second. We did a little bit in class already. But let me show you one more formula, which is very useful. There's another formula for work, right, which says dw equals f dot ds, right? Work done over a small interval is the force times the displacement. Let's put this result for dw into this equation for p. It says p equals f dot ds dt. Okay, I just plugged that into that, and we had a dt in the denominator. What's ds dt? What's the displacement per unit time? Well, that's the velocity of something. So it's just f times v. So that's a very important equation for power, equally important to these ones. Let me write it up here. Power can also be written as the force times the velocity. If the force and the velocity are constant, the power is constant. If these things are changing as time goes on, the power will be changing too. But this equation is always valid. So let's do an example of that. This is the airplane example. We're given an airplane. It has four engines, okay? Four jet engines. We're told that each supplies a force of 322,000 newtons of force. These engines were designed and measured, and that's how much each of the four engines supplies. And the force, of course, makes the airplane speed up and fly along. And then the total thrust on the airplane, if we're interested, the total force on the airplane, if we're interested in that, would be four times that number, 322,000. But we're just being asked on about one of the engines. And the question we're being asked is, what is the power of each engine? Well, what formula did we use? Well, if you look around the different formulas, it looks like this one would be good. The power equals the force. We're given the force, namely F equals 322,000 newtons. And all we have to know is the velocity of the airplane. And sure enough, they tell us that. They say that the airplane is flying at 250 meters per second. And let's take the simple situation where the airplane is flying straight. It's not going up. It's not going down. It's not turning. And so the velocity vector of the airplane and the force supplied by each of the engines are two parallel vectors. And therefore, you don't really need the dot product. It's just the ordinary scalar product of the two numbers. The power is then F times V. And now we have to do is multiply 322,000 by 250. If you do that, this is hard enough arithmetic. You're not going to do it on the test because you're not going to have a calculator. But anyway, if you do the numbers, it works out to about 8.05 times 10 to the 7th joules per second, or watts. So this is otherwise known as 80 megawatts of power that each of those airplane supplies, each of those airplane engine supplies. By the way, in the book, you're amused to see that this is then translated into horsepower. Let's not bother doing that right now. But if you wanted to, what you do is divide by using the formula that one horsepower equals 746 watts. So to get the total horsepower, you divide 8 times 10 to the 7th by 746, and it works out to about 10 to the 5th horsepower. That's each of the four engines. Okay. Turning to the other example, the power climb. Athlete is climbing up all the stairs in, it's called the Willis Tower. It used to be called the Sears Tower, but it's called the Willis Tower in Chicago. All you have to know is the height is 443 meters. Athlete weighs 50 kilograms. And she runs up the stairs in 15 minutes. So the time interval is 15 minutes. Knowing that a minute is 60 seconds, that works out to 900 seconds. As usual, it's always wise to put these things in straight SI units before you do a calculation. How much work does she do on herself in climbing up the stairs? It's the force times the displacement. You might think this is complicated because the staircase really looks like this. She kind of zigzags up the stairs, right? And so the displacements look kind of complicated. But what is the force opposing her motion? It's the weight straight down. You can neglect the horizontal component because there's no force opposing her motion on the horizontal component. It's only the vertical motion that matters. So she does the same amount of work as she would do if she just climbed up a ladder. You could work this out in more detail to say, okay, the staircase was at an angle theta, and work out the components and all of that. But if you work through that in detail, what you'd find is that the angle theta doesn't matter in the answer. All that matters is the total distance climbed and the weight. So to make a long story short, the work she does then is that here's weight times the height, which is also mg times the height, because her weight is equal to mg. And so we just do the numbers. It's 50 kilograms times 9.8, I'll do the unit separately, meters per second, times 443 meters. What are the units over here? It's kilograms for the weight, meters per second squared for the acceleration of gravity, and meters for the height. And if you work this out, this turns out to be a joule. So sure enough, we're going to get the work done coming out in joules, as we should. Do the math, and you find this is 2.17 times 10 to the fifth joules. What is the average power? Well, we want this formula here. The average power is then the work done over the time interval. It's 2.17 times 10 to the fifth joules divided by 900 seconds. And this works out to 241 watts. Or using the conversion factor to horsepower, she's exerting about 0.32 horsepower. Which sounds like a lot. A horse is a lot bigger than a human being, but in fact, for short bursts and sprints, human beings can provide a lot of energy. So a third of a horsepower while she climbs up the building. So we've now completed a discussion of work, power, and energy. Done a couple of examples in chapter 6. I'm going to finish up now by doing a couple of examples out of chapters 4 and 5, just as to help you with the midterm. So hang on, as usual, one more second while I repoint the camera. Let's see, let's do it here. Okay. Here's an example. This would be pulling boxes across a floor. We've talked about examples where there's a box sitting on the floor. This particular box, say, is 6 kilograms. And here's a person applying a force through a rope. What are we being asked? Well, let's ignore friction. There's not going to be any friction. Because a force is being applied to this box, it's going to start to accelerate. How do we calculate that? Well, F equals ma. If the person supplies a certain force, let's say the force applied is T equals 10 newtons, how we would calculate the acceleration. Well, let me not go through that in detail because I'm going to do a more complicated example. But it's just F equals ma. The force is F is equal to T, and then that's equal to ma, and we just use the known mass to calculate the acceleration. But we're going to make this more complicated. There's now a second rope and a second box which weighs 4 kilograms. So we have a 6 kilogram box and a 4 kilogram box. The person drags them both. Okay. Since there's going to be a second rope, let's say there are two tensions now. There's a T1, which is given as 10 newtons, and there's going to be some other tension, T2, in that second rope, which we don't know yet. Both these ropes are massless, and they're ideal inextensible ropes. That is, if you pull on them, they'll supply a force, but they don't get any longer. They keep the same length. So let's stop and figure out, first of all, what's going to happen here. Well, the woman's dragging the first box. The first box is going to drag the second box. Both ropes are going to be taut because there's force pulling, each one has a tension in it. And so the second box is just going to tag along in front of the first, behind the first box at the same distance. So we could write down a bunch of equations about each one's position and velocity and acceleration, but it's easier just to look at the thing and say, okay, I see what's going to happen. The second box is going to accelerate at the same rate as the first box. They're going to move in formation with each other. As the first box moves along, it causes the second box to move along at the same rate. Okay, so whatever the acceleration is, and we don't know it yet, it's the same for both boxes. And how do we calculate that? Well, it's complicated. We have two different bodies, so let's draw a free body diagram for each of them. Let's take the 6 kilogram box first. It has tensions T1, which is known, but T2, which is unknown, on it. What's happened at the 4 kilogram box? Well, remember the rule about a massless and extensible rope, the forces on the two ends are equal and opposite. So the force on the 4 kilogram box will be T2, the same magnitude as the tension T2 over here, except just the opposite direction. And then if we ignore friction, there's no other force on the second box. So this one weighs 4 kilograms, this one weighs 6 kilograms. What's going to happen? Well, we just write down F equals ma for each separate particle now. For the 4 kilogram particle, its mass, which is 4, is equal to T2 times the unknown acceleration a. For this 6 kilogram box, we have two forces acting on it, T1 to the left and T2 to the right. And so we write T1 minus T2 is the mass of that box times its acceleration, and that's 6 kilograms times acceleration a. I guess it would be a little clearer if I called these two masses M1 and M2. Just to keep them separate from each other. So M2 is equal to 4 kilograms. M1 is equal to 6 kilograms. Okay, once again, we got a couple of equations. What are we being asked? We're asked the acceleration. What are we given? We're given T1. Well, neither one of these equations by itself will give us the acceleration, but both of them together will. Sort of the fancy mathematical way of saying this is we have two equations in two unknowns. The two unknowns are acceleration A and the tension T2, which we don't know yet. So all we have to do is solve these two equations. We could do that by substituting the second one into the first to get rid of T2. And we have T1 minus M2A equals M1A. Or another way of saying it is T1 is equal to, here I'm going to solve the equation for T1 by putting this term over on the inside of the equation, and then I pull out a common factor of A. Remember, A, we argued, was the same for both boxes. And it just says tension 1 equals M1 plus M2A. And there we go, because we know everything in this equation except for A now. The result is going to be that A is equal to tension divided by M1 plus M2. Let's do the numbers. The tension is then 10 newtons. Tension 1 is 10 newtons. We were given that. The two masses were also given. There are 4 and 6. So do the math. We have 10 newtons divided by 10 kilograms. The answer is the acceleration is 1, and it'll come out in meters per second squared if we pursue the units. So the answer to this question is both boxes accelerate at the same acceleration, and the magnitude is 1. meter per second squared. There's another way of thinking about this. You could imagine the two masses as being one thing. It's one thing with a total mass of 10 kilograms, and something or other is going on inside it, but we can ignore that. And if we have to drag this whole 10 kilogram thing with a tension of 10 newtons, it's going to accelerate at 1 meter per second squared just by F equals ma for that whole thing. So once you see the answer, you can sort of see, and sure enough, that's what the equation says too. It says acceleration of that thing is the tension T1 divided by its total mass M1 plus M2. So it's better to work through the details, but this is an important check on this problem, that once we work through the details and got the answer, we can look back and say, oh yeah, I see what's going on. It's really simpler than that after all. Okay, let me conclude with one final example about elevators. Elevators are, hang on a second while I find my place. Yes, okay, there we go. Good examples because they involve weights and simple forces. Recall we did a problem. This was example 5.8 in class. And this example dealt with an elevator. And here was an elevator. It was being lowered by a cable with a certain tension in it. And the thing you're supposed to find is the tension. And the elevator has a mass of 800 kilograms. And what you're told is initially it's moving downward at a certain speed of 10 meters per second. And then it stops after a while. And I won't go through this example again, but I just remind you we did it in class. And the question we were asked is, what is the acceleration? So the first thing we did in solving this equation is to work out the acceleration. And we're going to need that for the next example. So I'll just tell you what we got when we did that. Let's see. The acceleration turned out to be plus 2 meters per second squared. Why plus? Well, the elevator was initially moving downward and then it slowed and stopped. And therefore its acceleration was positive because it initially is a negative velocity and then it became a zero velocity. So the net change in velocity was positive. That means the net acceleration is positive too. If the elevator had sort of kept doing the same thing after it stopped, it would then start rising again with acceleration. That's another way of seeing how the acceleration is positive. Okay, so that was just by way of setup of this particular problem. All we need to know for the next step is what the acceleration is. Okay, what is the next problem? This is example, this was numbered 5.8. This is example 5.9, which you can read along in the book if you want to. What are we told? Well, we're told it's the same elevator. It's still accelerating upwards at 2 meters per second squared. But now there's a person in the elevator. And the question is going to be, how much do they seem to weigh? If you're in an elevator and it accelerates upward, you can kind of feel a jerk and you feel a little bit heavier. And then if it starts moving downward again, you sort of feel lighter for a second. The faster the elevator, the more it does that. Of course, if you're an elevator engineer, you're trying to minimize those effects. You feel it more in an airplane, of course, with going up or going down. The question is, the woman is standing on a scale. And the question is, what does the scale read when the elevator is doing this acceleration? Well, free body diagram. Okay, here's the woman. What are the forces on her? Well, there's the weight. And then she's standing on the scale, so there must be a normal force exerted by the scale on her. And the scale is going to read. What the scale is, it's a force detector and measurer. whatever force there is acting on the scale, it interprets that as a weight, and it registers that as a weight. So that's the free body diagram of the woman. By the third law, there'll be an equal and opposite normal force on the scale. And as I just said, that's what the scale measures. So all we need to know is what is the normal force acting on the woman, and that'll be the reading on the same thing as the reading on the scale. So, and now it's reduced to a problem that a particle is moving with a known acceleration a, 2 meters a second, and these are the forces on it: weight downward, normal force upward. And all we have to do, the weight downward, that's her normal weight, which we're told was 50 kilograms. And n is the unknown. That's the thing we want to calculate. How do we do that? Well, F equals ma, ladies and gentlemen. F equals ma. The total force is the normal force upwards minus the weight downwards. That's the total force. And that's equal to ma. And okay, we're good to go, because we know everything in this equation except for the normal force. We're given her weight, her standard weight. We're given her mass, and we're given the acceleration. So all we have to do is do the numbers. The normal force is, solving this equation, W plus MA. What's her weight? It's MG. And so the normal force is mg plus ma. And if we bring out the common factor of m, you can see the normal force is just her mass. But it's not just her mass times g, which would be your ordinary weight. It's g plus a. So you kind of see what's going on. The acceleration simply adds to the acceleration of gravity. Doing the numbers, this is 50 kilograms times 9.8 plus 2 meters per second squared, or 50 kilograms, or 50 times 11.8, and it's going to come out in newtons if you do the numbers. If you do the math, this works out to 590 newtons. So that's the normal force. Now, what does the scale show? Well, a bathroom scale doesn't show you newtons. It shows you kilograms, right? And how does it do that? Well, whatever the normal force on it, it is calibrated in such a way that it shows you that translated back into kilograms rather than newtons. Another way of saying that is inside the scale, it just divides again by the acceleration of gravity. And that's the reading on the scale. So the normal force on the person is 590 newtons. That's the same as the normal force on the scale. But what is the scale reading? It interprets the normal force as a weight, and therefore divides it by g. And so what we find is 590 newtons divided by 9.8 meters per second squared. By the way, if you do the math here, it's actually easy to do it the other way around algebraically. So this would be m times g plus a divided by g. This is m times 1 plus a over g. So it's clear that if the elevator is accelerating upwards, her weight seems a little bit bigger than it would be safe on the ground by a factor one, and then plus acceleration over gravity, over the acceleration of gravity. Do the numbers. Oh, we don't actually have the number here. But if you do this calculation, 590 newtons, the apparent mass would be 590 newtons divided by 9.8 meters per second squared. And that's going to be about 59-something kilograms. So the short answer is, in terms of the reading on the scale, it's going to show that she weighs 59 kilograms instead of 50 kilograms. However, the physics of it is really just that the force, the normal force, is 590 newtons. That's all you really need to know. Okay, so I think that's it for the examples, and that's it for the lecture. Please do remember to bring your Scantron, bring your pencils, bring your formula sheet. Don't bring your calculator. And the TAs will be there to give you the test. I'll be out of town Monday and Wednesday. Good luck on the test. If you need to reach me by email, by all means, send an email. However, I'll be in meetings all day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. And we'll probably not be able to reply to you till later in the evening. So please be patient for me to get back to you. Thanks.